is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, get your team ready for this season by shopping Dr. Dish's all-in sales event and receive an exclusive $3,000 off their top training solution, the CT Plus. Dr. Dish is here to help your players have no regrets, just results, and be all in this upcoming season with exclusive offers on their top shooting machines now during the Dr. Dish September All-In Sales Event. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Stan Johnson, head men's basketball coach at Loyola Marymount University, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are jumping on to talk some FIBA, no medal, some NBA. There's some actual, I guess, semi news that we can maybe discuss. And then going back to our thoughts from last week about who we'd like to see representing the United States. I feel like we got in on that early because that's been the entire dialogue since the U.S. finished fourth in the World Championships has been who is going to play in the Olympics and who should be playing in the Olympics. I've seen a lot of articles all over the internet of people that kind of did what we did, where they came up with their long list of guys that would be considered. And if you could put together your dream team, who would it be? And we were on that first. So
Hey, Mike, I want to congratulate you.
What's that?
I'm congratulating you. You lasted longer than Aaron Rodgers did this season.
How many minutes did he stay? How many minutes did he
45
play?
45 seconds. He played 45 seconds.
All right. Well, good job, New York Jets. Congratulations. Not what they were looking for.
Tom Brady, Mike? Tom Brady?
You think Brady's coming back to the Jets?
No, that's been floating around there that the Jets should call Tom Brady. Hilarious would that be? After the Patriots honored him the first game, and then he goes and signs with the Jets.
Joe Namath?
Please. Well, Joe Namath might need like his bottle of liquor
he'd have to be liquored up to be successful, I feel.
Yeah. Okay. Anyways. So, so Team USA lost. And so I'll be completely honest with you. So like Friday, I know you were kind of monitoring the game more than I was. And then I don't exactly know how they lost, but they lost. And then was it Schroeder destroyed us?
Schroeder, Franz. I think the big thing is a week ago we were sitting here and we were lamenting the fact that the U.S. had lost to, who was it, Lithuania, Latvia? Who did we lose to that game?
Lithuania. Yeah, okay. Mike.
And we were lamenting the fact that they had given up 110 points. And in the last final, whatever, in the medal round, they gave up an average of like 117 or something. So I think you can trace most of it back to the fact that defensively they were just atrocious. And it went to a lot of the discussion that we had last week about who would be the centers that you would put on this team. Because the reality is they just didn't have – Jaren Jackson Jr. was – let's just put it politely, not, I think,
pitiful.
What they hoped he was going to be. Let's just put it that way.
He was pitiful, Mike. Between, he was pitiful.
Between all the fouling, and we documented last week that he really didn't shoot the three very well, which was, or very often, which is supposedly what he brings to the table on the offensive end of the floor. And so Kerr went small, which he got a lot of criticism for playing Josh Hart at the five in critical moments in those games. Look, you can quibble with the roster, but the reality is it cracks me up though when we talk about these other countries and we say, well, this team has three NBA players and this team has seven NBA players and this team has
eight NBA players. We literally had a whole roster of NBA players.
We have a roster of NBA players.
Mike, listen, the bottom line is this. There's zero excuse that the U.S. lost three games in this. Zero excuse. I don't care. You could come up with, like, I'll be honest with you, I may have been a little more understanding if we lost to Giannis or we lost to Luka. But we didn't lose to either of them. We lost to Dennis Schroeder, Franz Wagner, and a bunch of other random Germans. And then we lost to SGA. What's his name? Dylan Brooks. Like, come on now. Like,
7 for 8, baby.
Give me a break. Like, there's zero excuse. We're in the Team USA. Listen, that would be like the USA men's soccer team going in and beating all the teams in the World Cup. It shouldn't happen. Like, it absolutely should not happen. It's a disgrace. And I understand that these are not the top tier NBA players, but I honestly, Mike, when I went to look to see if we lost on, I didn't even think about it on Sunday because I was more focused on the football situation. I was sitting there watching and I was like, oh, I didn't check to see if Team USA beat Canada or not. And then I said, you know what? They probably lost. And I looked at it and they lost. Like, there's just, what's disappointing is that's the mindset. I went into it thinking that they lost just like I thought the Browns were going to lose. Like, disappointment, utter disappointment. And then it's amazing. Like 15 minutes after the game was over, the articles about Team USA and the Olympics started floating around out there. And then like, obviously Shams put out an article saying LeBron is trying to get all the guys that basically were on my short list and your short list, Durant, Steph Curry, I can't remember who else was on the Anthony Davis to commit to playing in 2024, and LeBron making this his last run in Team USA, and he views it as a last dance type of situation, basically. And I mean, listen, if I know LeBron, he's going to find a way to film this whole damn thing. And just
what do you mean,
like,
he's going to find a way? That's already in place, man. That's been a done deal. If he plays, there will be cameras there.
And listen, if it's him, I wouldn't see why he wouldn't do this. Like, and I don't see why these other guys.
Last week, right? I mean, I think from LeBron's standpoint, what you're trying to do, if you're trying to cement your legacy as the greatest player of all time by adding another gold medal at age, what will he be? Almost 40.
He will be 40, right?
He will be 40.
He's 39 right now. 39
right now. Okay, so he will be 40. So if you add a gold medal,
I'll fact check this on that. I was wrong about Aaron Rodgers' age, so I want to make sure I'm right.
Regardless, he will. If he gets a gold medal at age 39 or 40, that's obviously one more thing that he can put on his resume. And clearly, if LeBron is going to play, he's going to want to play.
He's 38 now, Mike, so he'll be 39.
So he'll be 39. Yeah, so nearly 39, nearly 40-year-old LeBron James, if he were to win a gold medal next summer in Paris, that would obviously be another thing to put on his GOAT resume. And LeBron is not going there with a team of this caliber of guys. I mean, he's going to want to go with his guys, however you want to define who his guys are. I was reading, though, and as I was going through some of those articles that people wrote that kind of piggybacked off what we did last week, you realize that Steph They stole our concept. That Steph has not played for Team USA since 2010. That's kind of crazy when you think about it.
LeBron's played more recently than Steph, huh?
Yeah.
What? But was it because of injuries or Like,
I don't know. Like, when I read that, I was like, that doesn't really make sense. And maybe I should fact check it, but it was on a
LeBron play in 2016 or no? He did, right?
He played. No, he didn't. He played in 2012. He
okay.
played in London.
Oh, no, he didn't play in 2016 because he was burned out. I mean, he was burned out at that point.
Right, right. So it's interesting. And then the other guy that you and I didn't mention at all that has been a big part of these discussions and articles, do you know who the guy is that we didn't talk about at all?
Someone we spent a lot of time over the summer talking about?
No.
Oh, who?
Draymond. Oh. Thoughts?
I mean, he is LeBron's boy. He was in Cleveland yesterday. My friend did a shoot with him, Miles Garrett, and some whatever their drink they're pimping right now. I don't even know what it's called.
Okay,
a friend from high school did, like, he does videography and stuff, and he shot it. And Draymond was in town, so he was in Cleveland, you know, his favorite place. I mean, listen, I don't know about. I mean, listen. I will say this: Draymond's last season wasn't terrible. He was not terrible last year.
No, I agree.
You wouldn't look for him for offense, but maybe for the defensive leadership piece of it. You know, like, he could do something. I don't know if you're not probably wanting him to play crunch time minutes, right? I mean, he's going to be playing.
The question
like,
is, where do you slot him? Because I think the consensus and everything that I've read, I know you and I put Mobley on the team. Anthony Davis was obviously the number one center that everybody mentioned. And then number two was Bam. And I really didn't see Mobley mentioned in anything that I read anywhere that he would be under consideration, which when you think about sort of where Mobley is compared to where Jaren Jackson Jr. is, there's a similar skill set there, other than the fact that Mobley can stay on the floor and doesn't foul the way Jaren Jackson does. But you're talking about a guy who's maybe a little bit undersized, not in terms of his height, but in terms of his bulk and ability to bang with some of these bigger guys. And so I think that's where you start talking about Anthony Davis and Bam. And then obviously there's a lot of talk about would Embiid play for the U.S. or could he play for France or will he not play at all and whatever the case might be. So clearly if you could get Embiid, that's, you'd have to think the direction. If you had Anthony Davis and Embiid, then I think your center issues are pretty much taken care of. And look, could Draymond play next to one of those offensive minded big men in certain lineups? I would think so. It's just interesting to me. And I think you said it right off the top that when you start looking at why the U.S. lost, and one of the things that I think people are pointing to is, oh, these other teams just have so much more size and the FIBA game is so different from the NBA game, both in the way it's played, but also in the way it's officiated. And that when you have these guys, like let's say a Valanciunas type, right? So he's a guy who in the NBA, he's got to sometimes cover players that are out, spaced out to the NBA three-point line. In FIBA, the three-point line is closer, so he doesn't have as far to go. You don't have the three-second defensive rule in FIBA that you do in the NBA. So he's able to lurk in the paint a little bit more. And so you just have things that theoretically make that size.
Is there a goaltending in FIBA? There's not goaltending in FIBA, right? Or is there
the ball? Once the ball's on the rim, you can knock it off.
Okay.
I still don't think you can't block a ball on the way
down. Trajectory.
Right, okay. But once it hits the rim, it's fair game. But you see that comes into play way less frequently than you would think, especially when you're talking about the caliber of athletes that, you know, are playing at this international level. It just doesn't come into play as often as you think. But it still comes down to, look, we can talk about the roster that we talked about last week, and you can read as many articles as you want about who may or may not be on the team. The bottom line is still that the U.S. has the most talented roster. It's just a matter of, I think, how important is it to guys? And I'd say like the World Cup, nobody in the U.S. dreams of wakes up when they're a kid and says, boy, I really can't wait to win a World Cup game against Latvia and get to the championship game against Germany or Canada. Like nobody in the U.S. is thinking along those lines. Whereas in a lot of these other countries, in some cases, winning the World Cup or winning the Olympics or playing for your national team was something that these players dreamed about.
Or beating Team USA.
Yeah, I mean, long before they ever thought about playing in the NBA. And so I think no matter what you say, that makes a difference. The motivation makes a difference. And of course, these countries, most of them get guys to commit to the long term, whereas the U.S. has been on these short term plans. I know back in when the Redeem team in 2012, like those guys made a 3-year commitment to be a part of it. They played in consecutive summers, but we're going to get to the new NBA rest policy in a little bit here. But with all the load management that we have, it's hard to believe that all NBA All-Star type players are going to commit to playing 3 straight summers of Team USA. It just doesn't seem likely that those guys are going to want to put that grind on their body, especially since typically those players are going pretty far in the playoffs. So I think you're kind of stuck with the system that we have. And look, it is what it is. The world is continuing to make strides to catch up. Obviously, the U.S., we have the most talent collectively of any country in the world. But when you start talking about trying to, especially the depth of our talent, but when you start talking about these other teams, I mean, basketball, you only need 5 dudes, right? And got a couple guys off the bench. So maybe you need 7 or 8. So these countries got to find 7 or 8 guys in their country that are really good players. And then those guys play together and they've known each other and they've practiced together and over the course of many years. And as a result, that continuity, I mean, we know in sports that continuity matters. And so when the U.S. is just kind of throwing together a team that practices for 3 weeks, even though that team might be more talented on paper, when you start looking at what really makes a team successful and the chemistry and guys fighting for one another, and that's not to say that the guys on this team didn't fight for each other or didn't like each other or whatever, but there's something different when the goal is a goal that you've had since you were a little kid. And when you're playing with guys that you've played with year after year after year after year, you're coming together as opposed to this U.S. team, which is kind of thrown together. And look, it is what it is. I mean, obviously, you and I both wanted the U.S. to win, but I'm not losing any sleep over the fact that we didn't.
Yep. I'm not either. I really honestly kind of forgot about it, to be honest with you, once again. Like,
I'd still like to see our best guys playing in the Olympics, right? I mean, I don't want to send a B team to the Olympics, not because I'm dying to win the gold medal for the United States, but simply because I think when you put the best NBA team that you possibly can out there on the floor, when you put the best players, it makes it more compelling. It gives the other countries something to shoot for. It makes the drama even more real than what we've had in this World Cup, where I think you and I said it coming in that we thought the U.S. was the favorite, but neither one of us was going to be surprised if this team lost. And I guess I'm surprised that they lost 3 out of their last 4 games and that they gave up whatever, 115 points a game or whatever they were giving up defensively. But I'm not surprised they lost.
Yep, I agree. All right, so I guess this kind of goes into the next part of our conversation, the rest piece of things, right? We kind of mentioned it. Is there anything else, Team USA, you want to talk about, Mike?
I mean, what do you think are the odds that we do put together the team, the quote dream team of guys? What do you think are the odds?
I think it's very high. I think it's very high. I think they're going to do whatever they can to make it happen. And LeBron's going to make it happen. One way, shape, or form, they're going to get a cut of the documentary or something. Like, listen, there's no way this doesn't happen. I'm just saying.
I agree. And Steve Kerr back as coach? or do you think Spoelstra?
I mean, is Spoelstra waiting in the wings? Is he next?
I don't know. I mean, I think Kerr keeps the job. There just was a lot of Steve Kerr backlash in terms of the way he played. But again, Jaren Jackson was out against Canada. Ingram was out against Canada. There was one other guy that didn't play, or one other guy that was ill, I believe, for that game. Because I think they had three guys out. I mean, when you look at the roster, I'd say Brandon Ingram has to be the most disappointing guy on the roster, right?
I didn't even want him on my roster. Or Jaren Jackson
Jr., one of those two.
I think when we picked the players, I think he was like the last one taken, Brandon Ingram. Or you wanted Brandon Ingram. I didn't want anything to do with him.
Okay. I think Ingram was, I would say, flatly disappointing. I mean, didn't shoot the ball well, just couldn't really find.
Would you say he was the Jason Tatum of the-
Hey, everybody's got Tatum on their team for next year. Yep. Everybody wants Tatum on that team. So we'll see what happens.
Alrighty. So the rest rules. So I'll be honest with you, I had completely missed this, Mike, and when you sent me when I sent you the list of things to talk about tonight, and you said the new rest rules, I was like, what is he even talking about? And I had to like Google it. And so basically it sounds like they're going to fine people if they're sitting more than one player that's been in the All-Star game or an All-NBA team over the last three seasons, if they sit more than one player. So for example, the Cavs were playing a nationally televised game and they sat Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland, then they would be fined $100,000. Now, here's my question, Mike. What happens if they're legitimately injured? Or who determines if it's a legitimate injury? Like, that seems like it's, like, I know we were talking pre-podcast, you said it's like a can of worms. Like, I don't know how you legislate this. Like,
I mean, it's always been the problem, right?
I feel like LeBron last year had sat out a few games because his foot was sore. Like they put it foot soreness. Like, what are you going to do? You can't go into LeBron's head and say his foot's not sore. Like, I don't know.
I agree. I think I like the intent of what the league is trying to do, because clearly guys sitting out is a problem. It's a problem for the league when you start talking about trying to market the product. When you talk about games that are on national TV, when you talk about renegotiating the media rights deal, when you talk about fans showing up to the arena who have bought tickets that are not cheap, and all of a sudden a team's on the road and star player X isn't in the lineup. Like, that's a problem. It's a problem from a public relations standpoint. And to be honest, it's just a problem. Like, people want to see guys play. Like, that's what you're being paid to do. Like, you're being paid to play basketball. But at the same time, I think you're 100% right that where do we go to make a judgment about whether or not a guy is truly injured or not injured? How does that determination get made? So let's say I'm the Cavs and I'm going to sit Mitchell and Garland for whatever game, and my doctors with the Cavs say that both of those guys are injured. Does the league have to come in and have an independent doctor, which I guess would be employed by the NBA, which I don't know how independent that person is, but are we looking at like a double layer of examination? If I'm the player,
it's like the NFL having the independent neurologist that does the concussion testing, right? Like,
right.
It's almost like that level of security.
Right. But at the same time, if I'm the player, like I already have in a lot of cases, right, players are distrustful of team doctors. Maybe not so much in the NBA. You don't hear about that. But in the NFL, you certainly hear about that. And so I'm assuming in the NBA that there's at least some of that players have. Think about the Kawhi situation, right, where he's with San Antonio. The team feels like he should be playing. He has his own medical team that says, no, he's not playing. He's got something wrong with his quad or his knee or whatever it was. And now you're going to add another layer of medical professionals from the league that are going to come in and be questioning and examining and looking at players. That seems like something that may not go over super well with the players. And I'm not sure how you get past that or how you enforce it. I like the idea of what the league is trying to accomplish because it's clearly a problem. I wonder about the execution of how they pull this off.
I think the award thing is definitely probably more of an incentive for players than this, honestly. And I mean,
right. But how many players are really eligible? How many players really legitimately can win a postseason award? How many guys are we talking about? That list is pretty small. You know what I mean?
Isn't it a stipulation to have so many games to be on an all NBA team too?
I believe I think it's the same. I mean, I think it's 65. If I'm not mistaken.
But that's an incentive for contract situations. Like, that's a huge incentive.
Still, that only affect. You're talking about a small amount of players. Which again, I guess the league really only cares. The league doesn't care if.
The league doesn't care if Tristan Thompson plays in 82 games, Mike.
The league doesn't care if Dean Wade sits out of 25 games. It doesn't make any difference. If the Cavs want to load manage.
Our dearly departed Dean Wade.
Yeah.
He's on a different team now, Mike.
What team's he on?
Isn't he on San Antonio now? Wasn't he part of that?
Was he part of the trade?
I'm pretty sure he got shipped out. I'm verifying.
I don't think so. Maybe he did. I don't know. I didn't think he did, but nonetheless.
Oh no, he's with Cavs. I'm sorry. I didn't think so. Sorry, Dean Wade. I didn't mean to ship you off to San Antonio.
Dean Wade's still here. That's good. I want Dean Wade to be here, but it's just this is going to be really difficult to enforce and figure out. And I think the league has the right idea. I think you want guys playing. You want guys playing in national TV games. I like the thing they talked about where they have to balance that a player in terms of home and road games, and that it says with a preference for those absences to happen in home games, which again makes sense, especially when you're talking about, right, if you're a Western Conference team and you're coming east, you're only doing that one time. So fans in your city only have one chance to see somebody from the opposite conference. And so if you're going to see Luka or you want to go see Steph Curry and you're here in Cleveland and those guys decide that's a game that they're going to sit out, and that's your one chance to see those guys in person. And so I can definitely see what the league is trying to do. I just wonder how are they going to possibly make sure that they're enforcing this. It seems like I said, it's going to be a can of worms, and the players aren't going to be that excited about it. The teams aren't going to be that excited about it. And as we go into this, I think there'll obviously still be some chicanery when it comes to teams doing and having guys sit out. And then the other thing that, I don't know if you want to jump in on that, but the other thing that was mentioned in here that I thought was interesting was that they're trying to avoid shutting guys down at the end of the season, which is basically trying to eliminate tanking where you have healthy guys and then those guys just end up sitting for the last 15 games because whatever, your team's no longer trying to win, which is a problem. Puts 15 games on the schedule for that team and for any of those teams' opponents, where are you getting the most competitive product? Are you putting the most competitive game on the floor that you possibly can? And obviously, if a team is shutting down their top one or two players, you're not getting that. That's not what is happening. And quite frankly, fans don't want to go. Fans, that becomes like a preseason game. Fans don't want to go watch that stuff. Yeah. And so you want guys on the floor. You want guys to be playing basketball. That's the bottom line. And then I'll take it one step further. When you look at this era of load management, anything that I've seen, I tried to look a little bit today. There's really no evidence in terms of games missed from injury. There's no study that really shows that since we've kind of gotten into this load management era, that there's been less injuries as a result of guys resting. the injury rate has stayed pretty much the same. And so if we're doing the load management to reduce injury, it doesn't really seem like that is the case. I mean, maybe you can make an argument. Maybe there's a study out there that shows that when guys sit, that they perform better in the games that they do play. But I would guess that even if that's true, which I kind of doubt it, I'm betting that that difference is very, very, very slight. So look, I'd like to get away from it. For me as a player, it just feels like, why wouldn't I want to play? That's how everybody grows up, is you want to play as many games as you can. You want to play as many minutes as you can. And then you get to the league and suddenly you want to sit out a third of the games. To me, that, I don't know, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
How many games does Victor Wembanyama play this year?
He's going to play about 50.
If he doesn't get hurt. Does that make him not eligible for Rookie of the Year then?
Probably not. Probably not. That's interesting.
I only come with interesting questions, Mike.
I think there's a good chance he gets hurt. I mean, I hate to say it, but.
Is he getting hurt in the preseason?
I don't know. I guess I
would. Who plays more games this season, Victor Wembanyama or Zion?
There was a lot of Zion love in the articles, Jason.
Well, the guy's got to play some NBA games before. I know
there was
I had
a
him
lot
on my
of
roster.
Love for him being on the Olympic team.
Okay. All right. You know what there's not a lot of love for?
What?
Kevin Porter Jr., Mike.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know is how it, much you've guy, read about it.
I've read a lot about it. Is this guy ever playing in the NBA again? I'm going to say no.
I think there's a pretty good chance the answer is no. And if he does, I think it's going to be a long time. Like, I think he's going to have to go somewhere else, rehabilitate himself as a human being and prove himself as a human being. And maybe at some point when he's 28, 29 and he's quote matured, maybe somebody takes a second look at him, but
I think he's going to go play where Starbury played, Mike.
Maybe.
You got the shirt on.
I got the shirt on today. Got the Starbury shirt on. So maybe KPJ's headed to China. But yeah, I mean the story. I mean it's disgusting when you read what happened, and it sounds like it's not the first time that there's been violence in that relationship, and. I mean, obviously it's inexcusable. I think there was reports just before we came on, I thought I saw that the Rockets had released him, but I don't know if that was from a legitimate site or not that he had been released. Cause I know they were waiting for, again, they couldn't just get rid of him because the league was involved in an investigation. And so they were kind of in a holding pattern. So I don't know if he was officially released or not. I'm trying to look. I don't see anything about it. So maybe I just caught that on Twitter and it was somebody posting something that hadn't yet happened. But as soon as he becomes eligible to be waived from the league, let's put it this way, Houston is going to waive him. I don't think there's any question about that. And he's not going to be around. And to your point, I think it's probably more likely than not that he never plays another NBA game. And I would say, like I said, if he does, you're talking about he's coming back in the league when he's 28, 29, when he's had a chance to resurrect his career and sort of rehabilitate himself and his image. Maybe he gets an opportunity to come back, but he's not good enough to be able for people to be bending over backwards when you talk about the things that he's accused of doing. I mean, it's just, no team wants to touch him.
Yeah. All right. I don't want to say anything else. I'm not that guy.
Yeah. Agreed. Hey, Hoop Heads Nation. Whether you're a beginner basketball player looking for a place to start or a seasoned vet looking to level up your skills, I want to tell you about your new go-to secret weapon. It's called Train. Train is a basketball training and education platform that gives you on-demand access to premium basketball courses created by expert coaches and trainers from around the world. Want to get better at blowing by your defender? Learn setup drills with NBA and international pro trainer Marius Williams, or how to use the punch drag with NBA trainer Kerry Darting. Looking to level up your catch-and-shoot skills? Practice space shooting workouts with former lead female trainer for Kobe Bryant's Mamba League, San Dixon. Or if you're just starting out, learn the basics of shooting and finishing at the basket from international champion, three-time Romanian Player of the Year, and Train co-founder, Vlad Moldovaniu. Train has 32 and counting actionable, expert-led, on-demand basketball training courses that teach you exactly how to improve your ball handling, shooting, attacking, and more. For a limited time, Hoopheads listeners get 35% off monthly, annual, and lifetime plans. Just go to gotrainbasketball.com/hoopheads to learn more and sign up for a free 7-day trial.
And the last thing, why are we signing Tristan Thompson, Mike? Explain this to me. Like, it's a partially guaranteed deal. Like, what? Why? This is a guy who didn't play all last year until the playoffs. Like, why? Is this just we want to have some like fan love or something, or like, what's the point of this signing? Like, I retweeted the tweet and said, okay, but why?
Yeah, I don't know if I know the answer to that. I think what I'd have to say is that good guy, good locker room guy, somebody that you feel like can mentor your younger big guys.
Just not about relationships, though.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, look – it's definitely not about, I don't think at this point, what Tristan gives you on the floor. I mean, he's not going to give you anything that is going to be significant in terms of helping your team to win or lose out on the court. That's not to say that he can't occasionally play minutes or whatever and get out there, but he's certainly not going to be an impact signing. So I think you have to look at it and say, is he a guy that they believe can have some type of positive influence in the locker room? And look, they would know that better than you or I would. So you have to, I guess, take it with a grain of salt and hope that they know what they're doing when it comes to that, because I don't really have anything tangible that I can point to and say, hey, Tristan Thompson's a great addition to this roster, other than the past history that he has here and the potential that he could be a mentor to Mobley and Allen. That's I think you have to look at this, and not of what he's going to produce on the floor.
Okay. Mike, anything else you want to talk about NBA-wise? Did you, something about Dame you wanted? Oh, I will here with the report that Dame said he would only show up to camp at Portland or Miami. But do you know what's hilarious, Mike? I don't know if you've seen this, but NBA 2K24 came out this week. You know this is a video game?
Okay,
it's a video, I'll take your word for it. It's a video game. And the commentary on the video game says, Dame's looking – they talk about Dame going to Miami.
Okay.
And they talk about how he was looking for a new place to be, and Miami's a perfect fit with Eric Spoelstra and Jimmy Butler. And I'm sitting here thinking, why are they talking about this? He's not even been traded yet.
What do you think, he gets traded before training camp opens?
I just don't see it, because I don't think Portland's going to trade him for pennies on the dollar. I just don't see them doing it.
Yeah, I don't see him doing it either. I think you play it out. I think you bring him to camp. I think you see what happens. I don't think – now, Dame's obviously not going to be 100% bought in, but I don't think he's going to be wearing a fat suit like our friend James Harden. I think he'll come out and he'll compete.
Was he was James Harden mentioned in the –
He was not. James Harden was not mentioned in any of the articles that I saw, although there was maybe one or two that I saw. He was on like the long, long, long list, but – in no way, well, shape,
or form. He was on your list. You wrote him down and immediately crossed him off, right?
Yes, I did write him down. So I guess I like Harden more than most people that I was reading their articles. So, yeah,
that's,
no.
That's not a good sign for James Harden.
No.
Legacy. Yeah, no,
if I like him more than other people, that is not a good sign for James Harden. That is about as bad of a sign. That's like the sign of the devil for James Harden right there. Yeah, I just – as far as Dame goes, I think he's going to be on the I think he's going to be on the Trailblazers when the season starts, and I think that he gets moved probably at the trade deadline, depending upon where Portland and Miami sit at that point. I mean, who knows what either of those teams could end up doing. I mean, Portland could theoretically maybe be better than people think if Scoot is ready to contribute right away and Shaedon Sharpe is ready to take a second year leap. Maybe Portland all of a sudden is a little bit better than what people thought. And conversely, you have Miami. They lost Strus. They lost Gabe Vincent. They weren't a good regular season team last year. Maybe Miami's so far down the standings that it doesn't make sense for them to trade for Dame. Maybe they're so far down the standings that they say, hey, we're desperate. We're going to trade for him. I just, when I look at the package of what Portland can get back, I don't really know how much what Miami, if you get Tyler Hero and you get some draft picks, I mean, I guess if Dame is going to give you half an effort or whatever, he doesn't want to be there, then maybe you just take what you can get since he won't go anywhere else. But it, the whole thing just seems, it seems goofy, and it'll be very interesting to see how it plays out. But I think Dame reports to Portland, and I would bet he gets traded sometime in the season as opposed to in the next 2 weeks.
Yep.
All right. I think Harden reports to Philadelphia too. I mean, I don't.
Yeah, yeah.
There's nowhere for James Harden to go. I mean, James Harden is going to get dealt for pennies on the dollar if Philadelphia wants to get rid of him. I mean, there's nobody that's going to give you anything real at this point for James Harden. There's no franchise desperate enough or stupid enough. And to me, I just feel like, does James Harden sell tickets for you? I don't really think anybody's around the league going, man, I got to get me some 35-year-old James Harden. I don't see that. And everybody knows the track record in the playoffs. So like I said numerous times this summer, I don't see a contender trading for Harden if you have anybody semi-intelligent running your front office, because how can you think in any way, shape, or form that that guy's going to help push you over the top to win an NBA championship when his history suggests that in your biggest moments, he's going to be nowhere to be found. And so why do you want to add that guy to a team that you think can win a title? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think they're both with their current team, and then Harden gets traded for pennies on the dollar. And I think Portland gets an average package back for Dame. They're not getting the mother load from anybody for him with the size of his contract and his age and the fact that he really only wants to go to one team. You can only extract so much when your guy's saying, hey, this is the only place I'll go. So,
yep. All right, Mike, I think it's time for everybody's most anticipated segment of the week. Did you watch Ahsoka last week?
No, but my son watched it. He vehemently disagreed with your assessment.
Oh.
He might be completely out on the whole show, so I'm sorry to report.
Oh.
He was not impressed with the lightsaber duels and whatever else you claimed was made for great TV. He was in vehement disagreement with you.
Tonight's episode was great too, Mike. I enjoyed tonight's episode too.
All right, well, I'll report back on next week's if he's not completely out after whatever fiasco was present on the screen last week. I'll see if he finishes it out, but he was not impressed.
Lots of I don't want to no spoilers.
Okay.
Lots of a certain character from the original trilogy in
all right,
the
there you go. So there you go. Chewbacca? All right.
No.
Okay, I'm out.
So the Browns, Mike. The Browns, baby, they're back.
Okay. Oh my God. Calm down.
Listen, Calm down. They whooped up on him, Mike. And listen,
they did.
Joe Burrow clearly was rusty. The weather conditions were terrible. I want to thank the weather conditions for my under. Thank you. Burrow's definitely was rusty, as I'll get out. And, you know, the Browns took care of business. And it's not very often that you get to say that. I mean, the offense still, like, if it's not going to Nick Chubb, which, by the way, we've already got our first game.
Yeah, one out of eight, right? One out of eight.
Nick Chubb got 100 yards. And it was not a hard 100 yards. I didn't feel like they kept having to feed him the ball. You know, he had
multiple drives where he's not even in the game, which I don't understand that.
He had five carries of over 10 yards, Mike. He's
our best player by far. I mean, I guess Garrett on the defensive side of the ball is also equally dominant. But every time Nick Chubb gets the ball, I expect him to just cut back, get 10 yards, gliding through the secondary.
Mike, do you see this football up in the corner of my screen? Can you tell this is football? I got this signed football up here golf outing.
Yeah,
it was signed by Jack Conklin, and then.
Well, he'll have plenty of time to sign some stuff now for you. Get him some more stuff as he's trying to recover.
Yeah. Listen, happy for the Browns to get a victory. They're in first place. I don't see how we lose this week. Here we go. Going to Pittsburgh.
Come on, man. Come on, man. You don't see how we lose?
Pittsburgh got absolutely manhandled by San Francisco. Manhandled.
Okay, look, we can go back through our podcasts and we could think about these conversations that we've had about the Browns of this is a game that clearly there's no way they should lose. And I agree. When you look at it on paper, this is a game that, again, if you're going to be a good team, this is a game where you double down on your initial impressive win. You beat Pittsburgh, who, despite the fact that a lot of people, I think, thought they were going to be maybe better, they still have a guy who's in his second year as a quarterback, and it's a game that you should win. So now you're 2-0 in the division. You're off to a great start. You probably got to get to 10 or 11 wins to win the division, for sure make the playoffs. So then the rest of the way, you only have to go like 9-8 if you, whatever, 9-7 if you win these first two. And it's certainly possible.
They have to go 8-7, Mike. They got to go 8-7.
Whatever. My math. The 17 game season, man. I'm not a fan, man. Give me back my 16 game season so I can talk 12-4, 11-5, whatever. Anyway, look, the defense was really good. The conditions for the offenses were not great, but the defense, we're clearly, if we stay healthy on the defensive line, we're going to be able to pressure the quarterback all season long. I just think that we're going to get to quarterbacks. And honestly, to go along with that, I thought the secondary looked as good as any Browns secondary has in a game in a long time. I just felt like they were right there. Even when guys caught the ball, they were right on top of plays. And the number of balls that they knocked down in coverage was more than I can remember in any recent season, at least. So I think the defense, if it stays healthy, is legit. I guess the biggest concern continues to be Deshaun Watson, and is who Deshaun Watson was 3 years ago. Is that guy, does he even exist anymore? Or are we getting a guy who is a very, very average thrower of the football and can scramble around and get you some extra yardage? To me, if Deshaun Watson is good, then this team has a chance to be a really good team. If Deshaun Watson is, I can't really throw the ball, but I can run, then this team will be, they'll be right around 500, give or take.
Well, I mean, honestly, Mike, you tell me, I want your honest opinion, because I know you've always been honest on this. Is Deshaun right now just a little bit more mobile version of Baker Mayfield?
I mean, yeah, you'd have to say yes. I mean, he hasn't shown anything since he's been here that shows he's anything more than a mediocre quarterback throwing the football. He's not accurate. He doesn't really throw the ball downfield. I haven't seen anything that's shown me an elite set of quarterback throwing skills. I mean, he can move.
And yeah. I think, like you said, I will give him I'm going to give him a slight pass because of the conditions on Sunday.
Correct. Like, I agree.
So listen, but we can only give him a slight pass so far here. Like they were trying to, when he threw that interception, people were like freaking out about it. And then like when they finally showed the replay where it clearly got tipped.
Correct.
It wasn't as bad as everyone made it out
to. It looked initially like you're like, oh my God, who's he throwing the ball to? Yeah, I agree.
So
that was my initial reaction.
Yeah. I was sitting there watching it and I was like, what the heck? And listen, the Browns should have won by even more because they had that fumble in the first half that
right.
that guy had. Jerome, I mean, we were on like the 20 yard. We were in the red zone. Jerome, my favorite text for, well, I mean, you only texted me once was Dustin York MVP.
Hey, you banged home three field goals, nice man. That was incredible.
That was amazing.
In the rain? Come on, man. That dude was awesome.
You know his name's Dustin Hopkins, right?
What is it?
Dustin York. It's Dustin Hopkins, not Dustin York.
I thought it was Dustin York. Thought we had Cade York and then his brother, Dustin York, replacing him.
But anyways, all right. So what's your prediction? Are they going to beat the Steelers on Monday night,
I think
Mike?
They beat the Steelers. I really do. I think they beat
is
the Steelers.
Is it close?
Yeah, I don't trust us to go in there and stop the Steelers.
Yeah, I think we win. The Browns are favored in Pittsburgh, which is crazy.
If you're going to have a good season, you have to win this game. That's the bottom line. If you lose this game, then you're setting yourself up for a long struggle to try to get to where you want to go. If you win this game, you set yourself up pretty nicely. And look, the way I see it is the season comes down to two things. It comes down to health, which it does with, I don't care what professional sports league we're talking about, whether it's the NBA, the NFL. Number one is you got to stay healthy. And I think number two, it's Deshaun, because every other aspect of this team I think is good enough to be a good team. And if Watson can become a top 10 quarterback and get back to the level that he was when he's with the Texans, then this team could be really, really good. But if he's being compared to Baker Mayfield after game 8, then I'm not so sure where this team is, both right now in the moment and moving forward over the next couple of years, where obviously he's going to be your quarterback barring injury. Deshaun Watson is going to be out there on the field. So it'll be interesting to see if he can regain the form that he had in Houston. And I think we'll know if he doesn't put it together by game 5, 6, 7 of this season, then I think you have to say that guy's gone. He's no longer around, because come on, man, you got to get out there and do it. And he's now had a full training camp. He had a full off season.
There's 230 million reasons he won't be gone, Mike.
Well, I don't mean gone. I'm not saying they're going to cut him or get rid of him. I'm saying he's your starting quarterback for the next whatever X number of years. I'm just saying the guy in Houston who was an elite all pro level quarterback, that guy will be gone after if we haven't seen that player by game 5 or 6 this year, then I'm saying that particular version of Deshaun Watson no longer exists, and we'll have to deal with the new normal of the fact that he's an average thrower of the football with maybe above average escapability.
All right. I think the Browns win. Let's go 21-17.
All right, I'm going to go 17-14 Browns. How about that? Low scoring.
Low scoring affair. All right. Sounds good. Anything else, Mike?
No, I think we got it. We covered everything. It was fun to actually talk a little bit of NBA news. And we're really only, what, like 3 weeks away, I believe, from the start of training camp, maybe even less than that. So
it's 45 days until the Cavs home opener.
So we're going to start maybe in the next couple of weeks getting into some previews and talking about what the league looks like and get our thoughts. We'll, I'm sure, do some over-under. Maybe we'll try to come up with some other interesting little gimmicks and side.
Well, we have to make our predictions, my terrible predictions again this year.
Yeah, well, we'll see. But we'll get all that recorded so we can continue to refer to it throughout the year, which is always fun. And, hey, we'll see where we're at. I'm excited for the NBA season to come back, excited for the Cavs to bounce back from their debacle against the Knicks last year in the playoffs. Hopefully they can put that behind them and have a great regular season. And we're going to continue to see the growth in Evan Mobley and Darius Garland. And hopefully we can convince Donovan Mitchell to stay here and continue to build what hopefully is the nucleus of an eventual championship team, but remains to be seen what this year looks like, but trying to stay optimistic. So on that note, we will leave it there. Thanks to everyone for joining us tonight. Really appreciate it. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.